This is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg.
Let's be positive today, uplifting today, if that's possible, with the state of New York football, and go around the horn, as it would be, and say good morning to Chris Canty. Good morning, Chris. How are you?
I'm doing well, Dave. Rick, hope you guys are having a good morning. I admittedly am a little nervous about tonight. Gerrit Cole's tune-up start before the second season next week. He needs to have a good outing so I can feel good about what's going to happen in the playoffs. Just
before saying. Before I attack that nervous tonight for the Yankees, let me say good morning to Rick. Good morning, Rick. How are you?
Good morning, David. Good morning, CC.
How's the baby?
Could you imagine if C was a Mets fan?
No. No, I mean, he'd have to
be put in the facility.
Into the postseason. The worst you're going to be is the five spot. Most people think you have the best chance in the American League going to the World Series, and you're nervous for the tune-up start for Gerrit Cole?
Yeah, Dave, I'm nervous. I want to feel good about my team going into the playoffs. Is that such a bad thing, Dave? I mean, I know you're a Mets fan, so you're not used to your team being in the second season, but I'm just saying, the Yankees are actually playing for something. We have expectations. Look, and Gerrit Cole was supposed to be the piece that will put us over the top in terms of being a championship contender. That's all I'm saying. I just want him to go out, give me six innings, a two-run ball or better, make me feel good about the guy that we're going to be dependent on next week.
So God forbid Gerrit Cole goes out there, 5 1/3 of three-run ball. Are you, like, what's your, you're now panicked for next week? Like, what happened?
No, I'm not panicked, but I'm not at ease either, Dave. You know what I'm saying? Like, I want to feel like, listen, we already know how much success the Yankees have had in the postseason going up against the Minnesota Twins. I just want to feel good about our track record and how we're playing going into the second season, man. Going into the playoffs, momentum counts. Momentum is a real thing going into the playoffs. Momentum is why the 2011 Giants were able to go on a run and win a championship. Like, I've actually been a part of a team that's done it, so I know how important it is. I just want everybody to be playing good baseball, and most importantly, the guy that's supposed to be the ace of the staff actually going out there and dominating. That's it.
And I can understand that, especially going into a three-game series, right? Like, how important game one is.
Yeah.
And, I mean, you want to feel good about Gerrit Cole, and he's been great. I mean, his last couple starts have been great. I think the real question with the Yankees, and I didn't love watching that game, the way they handled the pitching staff. I didn't love the sense
of urgency. Well, they didn't play well last night, yeah.
Well, they didn't play well. But I didn't love the sense of urgency. I felt like one of those Yankees games where it was like, you know what I mean? Like, we can afford to lose this one. Like, we're going to try to win, but we can afford to lose it. I didn't necessarily love the sense of urgency or lack of urgency.
Well, you're right. I think that was their mindset going into the game last night. And you're right, but it's true. I mean, last night was a game they could, I know you might not like to hear it, they could afford to lose. They are going to be locked up with Minnesota, right? They're not going to be caught by Toronto. They're not going to catch Tampa. The question is it going to be in Yankee Stadium or out in Minnesota? But they will be locked in with Minnesota in a three-game set.
But I think it's an important question. I mean, I would, if I'm a Yankees fan, I would rather not screw around, especially in 2020, where crazy things are happening. I know you own Minnesota, but I would feel a whole hell of a lot better if I was playing Minnesota in a three-game series at Yankee Stadium than in Minnesota.
Yep.
That's just me.
No, it's not just you, because I feel the same exact way, man. I do. But it seems like the Yankees are resigned to, okay, just making sure that everybody is healthy and they get everybody to the game next week.
Feels like
that's
kind
of what it looked like last night. You know what I'm saying?
Well, everybody
go out there, get their work, see how everybody is, and we'll go from there.
If you're willing to do that last night, then it's pretty obvious that being home against Minnesota is not the be-all, end-all that some Yankee fans would like it to be, right? Like,
well,
they
it might not be, Dave. It might not be the be-all, end-all, but that's why it puts even more pressure on Gerrit Cole in that start tonight. I mean, not that it's pressure for his start, but just from the standpoint of you want him to go out there and have a good outing. Just because you know this is going to be the guy that's going to set the tone for your team next week. I mean, if you go out there and lose game one to the Twins with Gerrit Cole on the mound, how do you think Yankees fans are going to feel?
Well, I think
after that L.
I mean, you're in big trouble. You can't afford to.
You're talking about me panicking right now. Think about what everybody will be calling in to say about the Yankees.
If we get on the air and the Yankees are down 1-0 and Cole has lost that game, then I think there's reason for panic. Then if I was a Yankees fan, I would panic because you're down 1-0 and you've already thrown your best pitcher. So yes,
well, Dave,
this is
the last time we're gonna see him before the postseason. So I mean, yeah, you want to feel good about what we got, our ace going into next week. That's all I'm saying. That's why I'm saying this is a big start. Higashioka is gonna be catching him. Seems like you know that's gonna be the deal once we get into the playoffs. So I mean, this is what you want. Now I will say this: with Higashioka catching Gerrit Cole, Gerrit Cole has been phenomenal. Like, he's been phenomenal. Like, it's the numbers between Gerrit Cole, with Gary Sanchez catching him versus versus Kyle Higashioka. I mean, it's not even close, Dave. You're talking about Garrett Cole with a 3.91 ERA in 46 innings working with Sanchez versus a 0.90 ERA in 20 innings with
Higashioka. It's got to be Higashioka. I mean, he's clearly more comfortable with him as his catcher.
It has to be.
Well, just think about it, too, though. I mean, you're talking about the backup catcher, right? So Gary Sanchez is going to play the rest of these games. Because you've seen, I mean, you saw in Boston what he's capable of doing offensively. Like, he can single-handedly win you a baseball game. That's why he has such a long leash. But if you're Garrett Cole, I mean, now once the start is over, you feel good going into the postseason. Higashioka's not playing. All Higashioka is going to do leading up to the first game of the series is focus on what him and Garrett Cole are going to do against the Twins. Because he's there for one reason and one reason only, is to get the best out of Garrett Cole.
That's right. That's his role on the team, is to get the best out of Garrett Cole.
Exactly right. So that will be his focus. So him and Garrett Cole can spend, from the time this start is over, leading into game one of that series, focused on exactly how they want to attack Minnesota's lineup.
Yep, completely agree with you. All right, guys, big football day. We got to get into the Jets, obviously the Giants. Will they sign Devontae Freeman? We'll find out about that. Mike Tenenbaum at 10 o'clock. But last night we saw just a piece of the loaded AFC take down a team from the National Football Conference. I got to be honest. If I'm a Saints fan, I am not happy at all today. And you know why? And I'll say it, and you guys can argue if you want. I don't know if I want to say done, but Drew Brees is on fumes right now. I don't think he has a lot left at all. I say he's not a very good quarterback right now.
Well, their defense wasn't good yesterday either.
It was terrible.
It was terrible. It's a bad turnover. Yeah, I mean, he doesn't look comfortable, right? Like, you can see it. I mean, maybe the inaccuracy is because his arm is, like, the velocity isn't there. And you know, when you're trying to pick up velocity, you can get inaccurate. But you saw, like, if he couldn't step up in the pocket, like, if the pocket around him wasn't clean and he couldn't step up and really get into the throw, I mean, there's a lot left to be desired with how he can push the football down the field.
No, don't try to put it on a muddy pocket, Rico. Listen, I know that at times it was uncomfortable for him last night, but there were also some times where that offensive line for the Saints had a clean pocket and Drew Brees just missed throws. Like, if you go back to the third possession, third series for the Saints, he was behind on the throw to Deontay Harris. Then he airmails one to Jared Cook, and he's wide open. Now, it turns out Cook was wide open because it was OPI, but he was still wide open, and Drew Brees wasn't close to hitting him. There was one early in the fourth quarter. They got the ball at midfield, clean pocket. He misses a throw on an out route to Josh Hill. Like, those are just things that we haven't seen Drew Brees do. And then on top of that, you have him compound matters by throwing that interception late in the first half. And the Raiders end up getting points out of that drive. And they're able to bookend scores on each side of halftime. Like, to me, that was the turning point of the game. And so, you know, we can make excuses about Drew Brees not having Michael Thomas, but the fact is that Drew Brees is done.
And I've been saying that. You agree with me then?
Well, Dave, I've been saying that the last year. I have been saying that the last year. Drew Brees is done. Look at the last two playoff games that the Saints have played in. Drew Brees looked done then, and he looked done last night. So, I mean, you can point to a lot of different reasons. Now, I also say this. To Rick's point, Saints defense was awful.
Awful.
There were penalties in that game that aided Raiders' drives. I think all of the Raiders' scores, with the exception of the one right before halftime, the field goal, were aided by Saints penalties. Like, I mean, you can't have 10 penalties for 129 yards and think that your team is going to be able to be successful, especially playing on the road in the NFL. Like, I mean, you're talking about defensive holding. Cam Jordan jumped off sides. He also had a horse collar in the fourth quarter. I mean, you had Lattimore with DPI. You had Jackrabbit with DPI. Like, you can't do those types of things and give a solid football team, especially on the offensive side of the ball, a solid offense, more opportunities to move the ball down the field. But that was the story of last night's game.
Yeah, that's the biggest surprise for me, though. I mean, we spent all this time talking about how, you know, teams that returned most of the previous year's starters, same coaching staff, the continuity, would be in better shape than these other teams. And they just, I mean, I don't know if it's he's done. Maybe that's the case. They miss Michael Thomas that much. But they just, I mean, they look out of sync, man. They didn't look good.
But you say that. And they were awful last night. I thought they looked really good week one. Now, I don't think Brees is great at all anymore, but the rest of their team, their defense looked really good week one against an offense we thought was going to be elite. And then last night, they were bad. I think it's the AFC. I think the AFC is at a different level than the NFC.
Wow. There you go.
So that's why. So that's
tripling
why the Jets are struggling. It's the AFC
down.
Is so
yes,
loaded.
Yes, it's a daunting conference.
It's so. So I should overlook the them being rated 32nd in the power rankings. Then it's just it's all because of the loaded AFC. Though.
Well, listen, we can only make so many excuses, and let's get into that. I mean, this is where we are, and you know, Joe Douglas was so offended. Remember that when he was on the K Show a couple weeks before the season, he was asked, you know, your team is projected to be one of the worst. And he was so upset and so offended by that. Is there any doubt right now, guys, that the Jets are clearly the worst team in football? Is there any doubt that they're clearly the worst team in football?
No. No, I don't. You name a team that's looked worse.
You can't.
You can't. You can't. I mean, there's some teams that are 0-2, but the way that, I mean.
But the Panthers are competitive. And the Bengals could easily have won a game and you know, had another chance against Cleveland. Like, I don't even think it's all that close. Is there, like, if I said to you the Jets are 32, and we all agree, who's 31? Like, is there a team that's even in the same stratosphere as what the Jets have done the first couple weeks of the season?
No.
No. No, I don't think so.
No, I mean, Minnesota's been a disappointment, but, I mean, they're,
huge
they're a better football team than
Minnesota
you're
beats
right.
the Jets 10 times out of 10 if they
right.
play.
Right. If they played this week, I got to figure Minnesota is a touchdown favorite over the Jets.
Dave, yeah. you're talking about a game that I watched on Sunday with a quarterback that spent the entire week taking second team reps, didn't even realize he was playing until minutes before the game, and looked better than the quarterback that's going into his third year that we drafted third overall.
Yes.
That's a huge problem. A huge problem. And I don't understand. Like, Joe Douglas is like offended that people think they're going to be that bad.
He's very offended. You heard him, didn't you?
But he's a smart guy. Look at this team. If you looked at this team on paper and said to yourself, "I'm pissed that people think we're bad," the only way you could think that is that your coach is actually a genius and he's going to get the best out of limited talent, which clearly he can't.
I'm just sitting here thinking about all of the young starting quarterbacks, and I feel like I can make a case that all of the young starting quarterbacks around the National Football League look better than Sam Darnold. Like, every single one.
Yeah, you can. I mean, is there a question about Burrow? I mean, Herbert.
No, there's not even a question about Burrow, Dave, and that's the team that is right ahead of the Jets in ESPN's power rankings. The Cincinnati Bengals are 31st.
But I got to tell you,
if Cincinnati played the Jets, I have no doubt in my mind that Joe Burrow will outshine Sam Darnold and the Bengals would win that game.
And correct me if you think I'm wrong. By the way, Breshad Perriman is going to be out at least 1 to 2 weeks on the scroll right now on ESPN.
Yeah, that's a big surprise. Breshad Perriman is going to get injured and miss time.
If I'm a Bengals fan and my team, I've seen them play for 2 weeks, I feel kind of optimistic. I do. I mean, I was right there against the Chargers. I competed against the Browns. My quarterback looks good. Like I feel like it's night and day between the 31st best team and the 32nd best team in the NFL right now, in my mind.
Well, Dave, to me, that's just proof that you don't actually have to win games in order for your fan base to feel energized and have confidence in what you're doing. Like, we always say, well, it comes down to wins and losses. You are what your record says you are. And to a degree, that's true. But everybody recognizes when you're rebuilding, you're just looking for tangible signs of growth in a positive way. And we haven't seen that with the Jets under Adam Gase with Sam Darnold. Sam was the reason why Adam Gase was given a job. Okay, he's a quarterback whisperer. He's going to be able to get Sam to realize his potential. And it feels like Sam has regressed since the moment Adam Gase got here. And there really isn't any hope that things are going to get better because you got the coach and the quarterback both in denial about what's going on in the building. Like, I don't want to hear Sam Darnold talk about how Adam Gase looked everybody in the eye after the game and said it's got to stop and things have got to get better. And then you turn around and hear Adam Gase defending the decisions that he made in Sunday's game or defending the decisions he made in the game against the Bills. Unless there's going to be some accountability from the head coach in terms of what he's doing wrong, how can we expect the players to hold themselves accountable and play up to a higher standard?
You can't. You can't. I mean, that's really where it starts for me is the lack of leadership. And Dave, I mean, you guys talking about rebuilding. You're year three of Sam Darnold. This is year three.
I mean, you should never be in this position with year three of a young quarterback you think is the answer. Ever.
No, you shouldn't be, but this is what happens when your GM, his schedule, his timeline doesn't match up with your young quarterbacks. because for some reason we thought it was a good idea to let Mike Maccagnan draft and spend all the money and then fire him. And then go into the season where, I mean, everyone outside of even Ira, I mean, who there's no bigger Jets fan than Ira.
Forget about bigger. There's no more optimistic Jets fan than Ira.
Well, like, now he's
always positive.
And he's beaten down. But even he before the season said that as far as talent around Sam Darnold, there's a lot to be desired.
You know what, Rick? You know what? I, in my mind, I'm really in disbelief because I remember after that Monday night game against the Lions where Sam throws the pick six and it's the worst imaginable start for a young quarterback in his NFL career. And then he bounces back and the team has a blowout win. And I was like, man, Sam Darnold's so good. There's no way the Jets can ruin this kid.
Yep.
And Rick was like, don't say that. Don't say that. If any organization in the NFL could do it, it would be the Jets. And it feels like we're at that point right now because everybody in the fan base is clamoring. You're saying, you know what? We look bad enough. Maybe we'll go 0-16 and have the number one pick and we can draft Trevor Lawrence. Like, that's what everybody is looking forward to now. Like, it feels like fans are checked out on Sam Darnold and whether or not he's going to be able to pan out, whether or not he's going to be able to show signs this season. Feels like Jets fans now want the shiny new toy, which is Trevor Lawrence.
Yep. Here is Sam Darnold. He's on the K-Show. He's on the K-Show every Monday, and he was on the K-Show yesterday following the loss on Sunday, and he discusses the fans being upset. Here he is, Sam Darnold from the K-Show.
We understand. The players are tired of it, too. You know, we don't like losing any more than anyone else. We're really close, man. We watch it, like I just said, we watch it every single Monday when we get back. We have yards that are out there on the field. We just got to go make the plays when they're there to be made. We got to take it one play at a time. We can't think, you know, any further than that. You know, if we just take it one play at a time, we do our job every single play, it really is that simple. And if we can do that, I think we'll be a really good team.
They're delusional. I mean, that's the only – that is
the only
thing.
What's he supposed to say?
Well, what's he supposed to say? That's fine. But what he is saying, he is repeating from what he heard from the coaching staff. It's exactly what Greg Williams said after week one. We were a couple plays away in that Buffalo game from being, you know, an elite defense. No, you weren't.
If that was the case – elite defense, there's not a piece of the team that looks good after 2 weeks. Not a piece. Nothing.
And they actually, the guys that stood out, I mean, Quentin Williams had a good game. I mean, Marcus May had a great week one. He was bad in week two.
Yes, he was bad.
First play of the game was an 80-yard toss untouched for a touchdown. In your building. And you were a couple plays away in that Buffalo game from being an elite defense? Come on, man.
You haven't had a lead. You haven't led one of these games. I mean, the Bengals led. The Giants have led. The Eagles led. I mean, you go around, the Panthers have led in a game. I mean, you go around, they haven't had a lead in 2 weeks yet.
You haven't been competitive, Dave. Forget a lead.
No.
You haven't been competitive.
But, I mean, the games, here's the thing. You watch the Jets game. You're 2 weeks in. By the end of the first quarter, it's over. Chris, you're playing 15 minutes of football, and by the time the first quarter's over twice now, you know that they have absolutely no chance to win this game.
Yeah, it seems like the games that they play are never in doubt. Like, the Buffalo Bills didn't feel threatened not once. I mean, even when Josh Allen has a fumble in the red zone late in the first half, like, they weren't even concerned with it. There was no urgency from them just because they knew that the Jets had no chance at being able to take advantage of their miscues. Like I said, against the Bills, man, it looked like the opposing team was practicing against the Jets. And they weren't worried about any mistakes that would come up because the Jets were so inept. Same thing with the 49ers. Had that been a different opponent, I'm not too sure that Jimmy Garoppolo doesn't play in the second half of that game. But because it's the Jets, Kyle Shanahan, John Lynch, they feel confident that they can get away with Nick Mullins going out there and playing one half of football and holding on to a win. Because it's the Jets. Like, I mean, if this was college football, the Jets would be the team you schedule for homecoming. Like, that's what this has turned into. They're the laughing stock of the NFL. Rich Cimini said it on Sunday. He's absolutely right. The Jets are the laughing stock, and I don't know how they get it turned around with this current regime.
Can they this year? Is there any chance that we get to the end of the year and it's like, well, you know what? It started out poorly. We didn't make the playoffs, but at least they righted the ship this season. Is there any chance of that?
Dave, how can you get things turned around when you don't have a head coach that's willing to admit the mistakes that he makes? You go back and ask him about the play calls that he has, and he says, you know what? I wouldn't change anything. If they execute better, it would work. How the hell does that sound to a player in that locker room when your head coach is saying, well, you know what? It's not my fault. The play calls are great. You guys just suck. That's what he's saying.
Which is amazing to me because you had the owner of the team say that, you know, your head coach is brilliant.
An offensive genius.
I mean, maybe it's just me, but I have higher expectations for someone that's a guru or brilliant.
Maybe the word genius means something different than I'm familiar with.
And maybe I'm confused because, yeah. I mean, when you start talking about, you know, people that are really good at their jobs, you usually, you know, I mean, you tend to see results, positive results. And yeah. I'm yet to see that.
You've seen almost nothing. Let's go to some of these calls. But
Dave, and I said this, I mean, before sports came back, period. I mean, we were talking about how important, you know, veteran leadership would be, how everyone would have to be, you know, self-starters, you know, teams with really, you know, really strong head coaches that could, you know, could get their guys, you know, ready to play, how important that would be. And right now, the Jets don't have any of that thing.
They don't have any of that stuff. They don't have anything right now. I mean, you know what? Becton looks like he's going to be a good player. Marcus May, I think, for the most part, is a pretty good player, although he struggled in week two. But you have almost nothing to be excited about with this team right now.
And what's the identity of the team? Who sets the tone? I mean, the guy who set the tone for your team is now in Seattle. And when you're devoid of leadership inside of that locker room, which this team clearly is, it's supposed to be your head coach that steps in. And takes on that role. And you're talking about head coach. You guys think I keep trying to tell you guys things you don't want to listen. He doesn't even speak to the team. He is a glorified offensive coordinator. That's what he is. And when all of a sudden you got to batten down the hatches because, you know, you're facing this kind of adversity, guys are supposed to be able to lean on their head coach. And right now, I don't know if they have a head coach.
No, they don't have a head coach, man. They don't have somebody that can be a leader of men. They just don't. Adam Gase has never proven himself that. All of the things that we hear about with his relationships with players are in a negative aspect. Like, I don't know that he has the ability to galvanize everybody in that building. And so if Adam Gase is not capable of doing that, this is not going to change.
Kent, do you think it's by chance that the New York Islanders just happen to be one of the most resilient teams in the NHL?
No, we know why. You make a change, you put the right GM and the right head coach in place, and all of a sudden, magically, things change? It's not magical. It's smart. It's what good teams do. It's what good ownership does.
Have you ever one time heard Adam Gase said, I need to be better?
Nope. I don't think he thinks he does.
No, I know he doesn't think he does. I mean, he thinks he's right 98% of the time.
But he's not right 98% of the time. He's not. He's not right 98% of the time. Matter of fact, he's more wrong than he is right. And I got the record to prove it. He's 30-36 as a head coach. That tells me what he's doing is not good enough.
It's those double-digit losses, too.
Well, they've lost, what, like 40% of his games by double digits? Something like that?
I think it was 29 of the 36 losses were by double digits.
Oh, so you're getting hammered.
Hammered.
Yeah.
Your team just quits.
Well, you know what? When you know that you have no chance to win, that's what happens. Let's go to some of the calls. Let's go to this is not the original Andy from Merrick. It's the other Andy from Merrick if you're scoring at home. Andy, other Andy from Merrick, you're on 98.7.
Guys, I'm like, like the Ray's Pizza in New York, like famous Ray's and original Ray's.
Do you know Andy from Merrick?
No, I think we bumped into each other. We might cancel each other out and disappear from the universe. So.
Yeah. And in 2020, that just might happen today. Go ahead, Andy.
Right. So I have some coping skills for you, Rico. I'm a longtime and long-suffering Jets fan. And a number of years ago, I decided that instead of at the beginning of the season having hope that they were going to do well this year, and like, oh, I'm going to predict 8-9 wins. Oh, maybe they can even win 10 games this year. We can go to the playoffs. Every year before the season, I, in my head, think this team will win 3 games this year. And I'm rarely disappointed. Now, this year...
You might be disappointed this season, Andy.
Yeah, this year I think I might be disappointed. But rarely am I disappointed. And now I can watch the Jets knowing full well that they will probably lose almost every week. They'll be a terrible team, bottom of the pops instead of top of the pops. They'll stink. And now I can just be entertained by the ineptitude and like the three-ring circus that is the New York Jets because they're a terrible organization.
I can't live like that. But I can't live like that.
Nor should you. Andy, that's a terrible way to live.
No, it isn't. It's great because now I can be happy all the way through football season instead of being absolutely miserable in week two, knowing that I have 15 more weeks of feeling like, oh, my God, this is the worst thing of all time, this stupid Jets team ruining my life again. It doesn't ruin my life anymore.
You know what the worst part is? Yeah, I'll tell you what the worst part is. And, you know, Dave, I think you felt this way over the last couple of years with your Giants. When you get late in the season and you start focusing more on the draft pick than actually winning games, and you start rooting against your team.
You know that's what – I mean, I was on the edge of my seat against Washington last year in a game that I wanted them to lose. When the Giants won the toss in overtime, I was like, oh, come on. And then they went down and scored that touchdown. Like, you know you're hitting rock bottom when you're actually actively rooting for your team to lose. And you look at the season saying, I mean, let's be fair. You're 2 weeks into the year, and there's not a Jets fan out there that has any modicum of hope. That's a loss.
Yeah, but
season.
It's not. But here's the problem, though. It's not about draft picks. It's about your head coach. You're now at a point, and the Jets fan base hates this coach so much that they're almost now rooting for their team to lose so he gets fired. I mean, that's the definition of dysfunction.
Mm-hmm. 2 weeks which may happen, by the way. If I don't think you have to root very hard for this team to lose.
No, I know, but why would you? You only get 16 of these things. Why? I mean, why would you want to be in that spot after two games? You wouldn't be.
Because
that's
so
not
angry.
A great place to be as a fan base.
Because they're angry, and I get it. I mean, it's a fan base that has seen enough. It's enough is enough. I mean, you've been bad for a decade now. It's 10 years of bad football. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, but where's the silver lining, though? I mean, if that does happen,
I don't think
he gets
there is
fired
any.
During the season. Like, who all of a sudden is going to step in and help develop Sam? And then if you are the worst team in the league, and you do have the first overall pick, now what do you do?
They're going to draft Trevor Lawrence and parachute him into the same exact situation that Sam Darnold was put in 3 years ago. The only difference being that you hope that you have a regime that's all on board with developing the young quarterback this time around. That would be it. That would be the only difference if you were to go the direction of drafting another young quarterback.
See, I don't get how you look around the NFL as a general manager, and I get this was his first offseason, and see what every single one of these other teams is doing for the young quarterbacks. How much better Josh Allen looks with Stephon Diggs. How much better Kyler Murray looks with DeAndre Hopkins. And think to yourself, you know what? These are good pieces around Sam Darnold. This is exactly what he needs to take that next step.
But you know what? Then you got to blame Joe Douglas for that.
But let me say this. I don't think that Joe Douglas looks around and says he has good pieces for Sam, but I think he acknowledges that there's only so much he can do in one offseason, and his priority was fixing the offensive line. He was saying, okay, I've told this kid's parents that I'm going to do everything I can to protect their son. Let me go out here and put together an offensive line. Now, to his credit, seems like he's hit on Mekhi Becton as the left tackle. Looks like you got a guy that'll be there for the next decade plus. The offensive line is going to be a work in progress. Just because we haven't seen OTAs, we haven't seen any preseason games, it was going to take some time for them to be able to gel, right? We knew that. But that was his priority, and the weapons around Sammy didn't necessarily feel like he had the flexibility under their cap to be able to go out and do those things.
Yeah, but he's not
stupid.
And
preserve opportunities to do things in future off seasons.
Yeah, but my point is he's not stupid, right? In the fact that he actually came out and said that he was offended that people thought this team was going to stink. Like, he's looking at the talent. Like, if Jamison Crowder, and he's, I mean, listen, I like Jamison Crowder, but if that's the guy that you're going to rely on to help your young quarterback, like, that's saying something. So, I mean,
see, you look at that comment differently than I do, man. I feel like that was very tongue in cheek. The general manager trying to set the tone for the season, trying to support his team, trying to support his head coach. But Joe Douglas ain't stupid. He was in Philly. He was in Baltimore. He knows what a good team looks like. And he knows that the Jets ain't a good team, which is why he wanted a 6-year contract. Like, this was going to take some time. But I think the biggest question that Joe Douglas has to ask himself and answer at some point in this football season is whether or not he has a head coach. And if he doesn't, then he needs to start thinking about who the next head coach of the New York Jets is going to be.
Yeah, but that's
before he thinks
point,
about
though.
Who the quarterback is going to be.
But that's my point. Is Joe Douglas is a smart guy. He comes from really good organizations, Baltimore, Philly, right?
Mm-hmm.
So he realizes going into the season, especially in New York, that the most important thing for this team moving forward is to develop Sam Darnold, to see Sam Darnold take that next step. So, I mean, it doesn't take you know, Chris Canty, who's won a Super Bowl, to look at the wide receivers and the skill position players and say, you know what, these aren't great. Like, this is...
They're
this is
putrid,
not exactly
is what they
okay,
are. They're
unless,
putrid.
So, okay, so if Chris can see that, I can see that, you can see that, Joe Douglas can see that. The only reason Joe Douglas would buy into this is enough is if his head coach was telling him he could make it work. Do you have enough? Yeah, this is good. This is what I need. I have enough.
How could he possibly then he I mean, we're,
because
we're
it's about the system
with
him.
This is enough?
Because he's a genius, Dave. And it's about the system. It's about the X's and O's, not the Jimmy and Joe's.
I don't know, man. I give up.
The plays are right.
I give up.
The plays are always perfect. It's the players that screw it up.
Yeah. Well,
that's,
you know what?
Crazy.
If you don't have
that's wild to me that a coach would actually come out and say that. That's wild. Like, no accountability whatsoever. Like, none of this is on him.
It's all on him. But here's the thing, Dave. It's all on him.
But that's the point, Dave. Every head coach that I've played for, college and pro, like, when you go out there on game day, the coaches say the mistakes are mine. Go out there and play. If you go out there and you make a mistake in the game, that's my fault for not preparing you better the week leading up to the game. This dude, when we talk about the games and the play calls and all the situations he puts his guys in, that's on them. That's not on him. That's crazy to me. Like, I cannot even fathom that. Like, if I'm a guy in that locker room, that is driving me mad that my head coach is doubling and tripling down on the decisions that he's make in terms of play calling, sequencing, and game management. That is crazy to me.
You got 14 more games to go. All right, so Mike Tannenbaum's going to join us at 10, CMT on a Tuesday. And then tomorrow you have Knob Observations. It's a busy week for you. The middle of the week, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, CMT, Knob Observations, and then CMT again on Thursday. That's a tall order for you, Rick.
Yeah, this is when I'm meant to really step my game up and shine.
Yes. Mondays, Fridays, you know, leave the heavy lifting to us. Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, we look to you.
Well, we all know I couldn't handle a Friday. I had to make my picks on a Friday. I couldn't handle doing a CMT.
You did well this week, though. What'd you go, 2-1?
Right. 2-1, yeah.
It's a good week.
Chris, I think you went 2-1 also.
I believe that's correct, David.
Yeah, and I went 1-2.
Yeah, you got screwed. I mean, that Steelers
game. With what, the Pittsburgh game?
Yeah, oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Those are the worst.
Yep, that's what happened. But that's why you don't gamble.
Yeah, but you love it.
No, well, you know.
You love it.
Doing the bets with you guys.
I would actually like the sound too when you made your Kansas City pick. Oh, 8.5. It's Kansas City.
I couldn't have been more wrong on that. I could listen. You took Philadelphia.
I know.
That's a good point, Dave.
And I'm not sitting here beating you Touché. Up over it. If every game that I loved, I won.
RJ Bell took Philly.
I'd be a millionaire.
RJ Bell took Philly in his picks too,
and they got crushed.
They got destroyed. Yeah,
they're not a good team. They have major problems there in Philadelphia.
Yeah, I don't understand how Carson Wentz looked so good at the end of last season.
He's going backwards.
I mean, it has not looked good at all.
He's going bad. I mean, apparently it's Philly Sports Talk Radio that they're clamoring for Jalen Hurts to start games now.
Yeah, but that Philly offensive line is really bad too. And bad offensive line play typically lends itself to your quarterback struggling a little bit. You know what I'm saying? So I don't want to put it all on the group up front, but that offensive line ain't what it's been in years past.
No. Well, they're not going to be, right? I mean, Brooks is out for the season. Dillard's out for the season.
The Eagles have turned into the New York Yankees in the NFL with the amount of injuries. And it doesn't stop.
Yeah, no, they haven't.
San Francisco kind of takes that mantle, though, don't they, though?
I mean, the 49ers
are ravaged with
injuries. But I mean, last year the Eagles were decimated, and somehow, some way, they found a way to make the playoffs. I mean,
I see where you're going.
And you're like, it can't be that bad this year. Oh, yeah, it can.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it actually can be.
It sure can. Yeah. Let's go to Ira, Staten Island. What's up, Ira? How are you?
Hey, good morning, Dave. You know, I tell you, you're going into the season. I wasn't blind here. I knew what the deal was. Like Chris said, he could only do so much. He appears to have fixed the offensive line. But the thing that I have a problem with is that they are so uncompetitive. And they show no fire. It's a reflection on the coach. You have players yesterday saying they don't practice hard. I mean, how do players say that after week two? After week 10, if you're 3-7, I could understand that. I've never heard that after week two. So just going forward, listen, you know there's going to be changes. And I'm just trying to understand what Douglas is trying to do. We're going to end up with Sam at the end of the year. We're going to question whether we're going to go forward with him, or if we're in a position to take Trevor Lawrence, they're going to go in that position. That's a decision Douglas has to make. So since they got this so messed up, and you got Sam in his third year, and you still don't have to pay him, but they're not ready to win, you wonder if Douglas really isn't sold on him, okay? And he doesn't.
You reset the money.
Right, you reset the money, and you're basically getting a restart. You're getting a quarterback on a rookie deal next year. You got a ton of money you're carrying over to cap space, and you got a boatload of picks. And my money is, I mean, I'm rooting for Sam. I want him to be my quarterback. But if he can't take that next step, all right, whether it's the coaching, whether it's him, whatever it is, if Douglas decides to go in a different direction, I think that's probably the right business move if Sam doesn't show any improvement.
Yeah, but that's why for me, and maybe that's been his mindset the entire time, is you know, I'm not 100% sold on Sam Darnold, and, you know, I'll save my money, get all these draft picks, and we can do a restart. But, I mean, the point you just made is that, you know, by the time we get to the end of the season, if the team, you know, looks this bad, Sam hasn't taken a step, Joe Douglas didn't draft him, they can reset the money, they have a high enough draft pick where it could be Trevor Lawrence, it could be Justin Fields, whoever it ends up being, would show to me this is exactly why this season you should have went out and made a move that would have helped your young quarterback.
Agree.
Like, this would have been the year to go get a DeAndre Hopkins. Like, to
there
actually get
real,
some
there
answers.
Were real talented guys available, and you did nothing.
But it's exactly right, why it's exactly why Jerry Jones went and got Amari Cooper. I need to find out if Dak Prescott can be my quarterback or not. Who does Sam have that they can? I mean,
he has nobody.
I mean, how many times do I have to listen to? You're talking about. Correct me if I'm wrong. Is Aaron Rodgers one of the most talented quarterbacks in the history of the sport?
100%.
Yes.
100%.
And they're complaining he doesn't have enough weapons. He's got Devontae Adams and Aaron Jones, and he doesn't have enough weapons. How come they didn't draft a receiver? What the hell does... If he doesn't have enough weapons, what the hell does Sam have?
He has nothing. He's working
he has
on
nothing
right now.
He has nothing. And Ira, thanks for the call. Rick, he has nothing. I mean, we've gone through this. The Jets are the worst team in football, period. The Jets' skill position players are the worst in football, period. Like, these are not even up for debate. These are facts 2 weeks into the season. And not only do they have the worst skill position players, now they're hurt. So you're the worst of the worst, and now what you have, which isn't even very good, isn't even capable of playing. Le'Veon, not going to play for a while. Rashard Perryman, not going to play for a while. I mean, it's incredible what's going on right now.
But I'm just confused, though. I'm confused. Like, I don't understand, and maybe it was tongue-in-cheek, how your GM, who's a smart guy that's come from winning organizations, can say, I'm offended with how bad people think we're going to be. Look at what you have. You got no Mosley, no Adams. You got, I mean, you name the weapon on the offensive side of the ball. A brand-new offensive line that was going to clearly take some time to gel.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how could you look at that and be upset that people thought you were going to be bad? You're bad. You're not a good team.
No. No, you're not. But how could they?
Yeah, but
what I don't understand, why would you play the game? Why would you put on the charade of, I mean, a very insulted that people think we're going to be bad? It's plain as day that you're going to be bad. Why not own it and say, you know, we're in the midst of a rebuild, so be patient with us?
You
I thought the New York fans, Chris, would have a lot easier time of dealing with that.
No, but Jets fans don't want to hear that, though, Dave.
But
Jets fans don't want to hear that we're still rebuilding. Like,
but don't people want to hear the truth?
Perpetual rebuild for the last decade. Jets fans don't want to hear that. So I get what Joe Douglas was trying to do. He was trying to put the chip on his team's shoulder and try to support the head coach that's responsible for him getting the job. But that's why I look at this whole situation with the Jets big picture, and I think Sam is going to be the collateral damage from missteps by the organization. There was no reason for Chris Johnson to run out and hire Adam Gase right after he was fired by the Miami Dolphins, but he did. And as a result of that, you ended up moving on from Mike Maccagnan after he put you in position to draft Sam, and he spent all of this money, $100 million in cap space on free agents. Like, those were all mistakes that were made by Chris Johnson and the Jets organization, and as a result, you didn't put the infrastructure in place or the right infrastructure that was going to be able to support a young quarterback, and now you got people in the fan base that are clamoring to move on from Sam if you got a chance to draft Trevor Lawrence or Justin Fields. That's where you're at. So whether or not Sam Darnold is actually a good NFL player is irrelevant to what the Jets are going to do. If Sam can't prove that he is a bona fide star in this league by the end of this year, which is likely that he doesn't.
How can he?
Then the Jets are going to move on from him.
How can he possibly show that he's a bona fide star?
But that's
league.
My point, Dave. You can't even get the answer to a question about the player because you can't evaluate him properly based on the circumstances and the head coach he has. You don't know if you have a head coach. How the hell are you going to find out you got a good quarterback? Like in that special with Nick Saban and Bill Belichick, Bill Belichick says it plain as day. Good players can't overcome bad coaching. We already seen Adam Gase is not a good coach. This is fifth year in the NFL. Everybody around the NFL that covers the sport, that analyzes it, says Adam Gase ain't a good coach. Well, with the exception of Mike Tannenbaum, but that's another story. But everybody says it. So how are you going to be able to get an evaluation on Sam if you don't have a good head coach? You can't. And so if you keep having the question on whether or not he's the guy, there's no way that Joe Douglas is going to have the type of draft capital that it looks like the Jets are going to afford him based on the season they're going to have. There's no way he's going to have a top five pick and decide that he's not going to use it on one of those quarterbacks coming out. No way. No.
He's gonna use a quarterback, and they're going to move on and start from scratch with a new head coach.
Dave, you know who the biggest Jets fan in the world is now? He actually just supplanted Ira as the biggest Jets fan in the world.
I hope it's not going to be
Lawrence.
Trevor Lawrence.
I don't want to go there.
He wants the Jets to win as many games as possible.
Don't keep losing. But you know how Jets would it be to go like win two of your last three games and wind up with the third pick in the draft?
Well, I'm sitting here trying to figure out why we're surprised. I mean, we're already talking about Trevor Lawrence. I mean, I said this at the start of the season. If, God forbid, they got off to a slow start, we took phone calls last year about if the Jets should draft Tua. This is no different. I mean, it looks awful.
But now it's real. Like, now it's tangible. Now
it's real. But so was the 1-7 start. Your season was over.
I know, but you weren't going to take a new quarterback after 2 years. After three and three dreadful seasons, I think it's realistic to think that they would take a new quarterback.
I want to know who lied to Joe Douglas and said, hey, Joe, this is good. I'm telling you, they're sleeping on us. We're not going to be nearly as bad as everyone thinks.
Got to be the coach, no? Who else could it be?
It would have to be. It would have to be. Joe Douglas is too smart to be offended that people thought they were going to be bad.
Yeah, but Joe Douglas is also too smart to believe anything that Adam Gase is saying in terms of they're sleeping on us. Come on, man. Come on. Joe Douglas knows better than that.
I hope he does.
Rick, you know it's true because he demanded that he have a six-year contract. He's like, I'm not taking a job unless I get a six-year contract. He ain't crazy. He knew what he was looking at. And he probably also knew that there might be some truth to the rumors about Adam Gase.
It's bad. We're 2 weeks in, guys, and it is really, really bad. All right, are you ready for Andy from Eric? Are you guys ready to roll with some NBA questions?
Can I give you some breaking news quickly, though?
Is it real legitimate breaking news?
I mean, it's fairly legitimate.
Okay.
It's right up
Go ahead.
Here we go, Canty. I hope you're ready for this. Are you sitting down? I hope so.
I'm sitting down. What we got, my friend?
I got Heisman watch. I got the top.
Oh, dear.
Trevor Lawrence, Justin Fields, Spencer Rattler, Sam Ehlinger, Derek King, and Travis Etienne. Round out your top six right now.
There you go. Okay.
Heisman watch.
So five quarterbacks and a running back. Is that what I just got there?
You have, five quarterbacks and running back. Correct.
Yep. Sounds
and if, I guess if you go to Oklahoma, there's a strong possibility you'll be in contention for the
You're already in. Mm-hmm. You're already in contention. If you go
now, did I get that right? Is it Derek King?
I don't know. The quarterback from Miami,
King.
Right?
Derek King. Derek.
Derek King.
Yeah.
He's good. He played well on
Saturday.
He's
good. He's real good.
All right, here we go. Andy from Merrick. We'll see what you got. Good morning, Andy.
Good morning, DCR. You are right, Dave. It is a NBA Tuesday, and since 99's Lakers are pushing forward towards the title, I got four questions about the current roster.
Okay.
Here we go.
Starting with three guys on the current Lakers went straight from high school to the pros. Can you name them?
Dwight, LeBron, and who would be the Dwight, LeBron, J.R.
Smith. J.R. Smith.
Yeah.
CeCe, my man. Question number two. The current roster has two Kentucky Wildcats on it. Name them.
Rondo, Anthony Davis.
AD.
There you go. Two for two. In this abbreviated season, both LeBron and AD have exceeded 1,600 points for the season. Who ranks third on the team in scoring this year with 782?
782.
Do you think it's Kuzma?
Could be Kuzma. How many points did
Yeah, it's
Bradley
Kuz.
Have?
It's Kuz. It's got to be Kuz.
Yeah.
It's got to be Kuz. Three for three. All right. Speaking of Kuzma, he wears jersey number 0. Can you tell me which current Laker wears the highest uniform number?
Markieff Morris.
The well-traveled Markieff Morris is correct.
Double eights.
And there we go.
Guys, stay healthy as always.
All right. Thank you, Andy from Eric. When you do that, well,
that's my kind. That's my kind of trivia right there.
Just changes the whole complexion of the day when you do well with Andy questions, doesn't it?
Yeah, but I mean, it's just
yeah. But that was soft toss relevant. Today from Andy.
It's okay.
Yeah, he wasn't coming in high and tight.
It's fine.
He can tell you're nervous.
You know, tomorrow's hockey, and God knows what happens then.
He can tell Canty's nervous about Garrett Cole's start tonight.
And rightfully so.
I mean, man, stop making. Listen, I'm not wrong. I'm not wrong.
I'm not wrong.
This is an important start for Garrett Cole.
This is a big
one. Rick, I'm not wrong.
This is a big one.
I'm not wrong, damn it.
Garrett Cole gets shelled tonight.
Stand by it.
You'll be looking for Canty right next door. He'll be living in the same place as Ray Finkel is.
Oh, yeah. Could you imagine if he gives you like 4 1/3 of 6 runs? Forget it.
Oh, done.
Canty will call out tomorrow. He will call out tomorrow.
Oh, my goodness.
Laces out.
I'm in Psychoville and Finkel's the mayor.
How good was DeGrom last night? Poor Jacob DeGrom, huh?
14
strikeouts, can't get no run support.
None. He was.
They don't like Jacob DeGrom. I'm resigning myself to the fact that the Mets lineup does not like Jacob DeGrom. I don't know what he did to him, but they don't like him.
Yeah, I mean, it's to the point now where it's just sad. I mean, it really is.
It's unbelievable. Every start he gives you is dominant. And still, his ERA, 2 runs in 7 innings, went up last night. Unfortunately, and I really do care.
That last start killed him. That last start killed him.
What did he go, two innings?
3 runs.
Yeah, three runs.
Yeah, that one in Philly,
and he wasn't right, which is really unfortunate. Right. But I don't, unless he gives you, he's going to go again this weekend, right? Unless he gives you a great outing, I don't see how he's going to win the Cy Young again.
No, I don't think so either.
Right? Which kind of stinks. And he's so good.
No, he's unbelievable. I mean, he's the
best.
We don't
deserve him, to be honest with you. The Mets,
yes,
the Wilpons, the Mets don't deserve him.
We do.
You and I do. Him. But the Wilpons don't.
I saw your tweet. Another great deal by Brody.
Oh my God! I mean,
it's unbelievable.
I mean, the trades that he made were just mind-boggling.
It's unbelievable. Like he giving away legitimate prospects.
Yeah, guys that are now pitching in the major leagues that he just gave away for nothing.
Guys, stop being so negative, man. You're not going to have to deal with Brody or the Wilpons
anymore.
Very soon.
That's true. It's positive. Yeah. You know what?
DCR is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg. Catch them weekday mornings at 9 on 98.7 ESPN.